itself. We're here with Sasha Jones, Joe Weingrad, Merrick Moyes, and Fred Tupman to talk about the 45th anniversary of Earth Day. On the way back to this conversation, I'll announce that later, so I'm going to jump right into this, not to lose momentum. But so let me pick up where we left off, and I'm going to go to Fred and Jerry, then over to back into the studio here with Merrick. And because Fred, there's a connection here. You've said on the show before what Sasha just said about, you know, the waters and the animals not directly kind of feeling and being directly related to what people are struggling with who are facing environmental challenges in our poorest communities. On the other hand, that climate change and what happens to our rivers, what happens to the earth, what happens to the animals on our planet, directly affects all of us. I mean, it's all connected. So where do we take all that?
So the connection is the underlying economic system, which incidentally is capitalism, which is hard to tee up, because if you start criticizing capitalism, people think you're arguing for something else like socialism, which actually isn't the case for me. But what I am pointing out that, you know, apartheid and slavery, which were capitalist institutions, and a lot of these environmental problems we're fighting are also kind of captive to that same economic system. I think we have to confront that a lot of the economic stuff that we do in this culture is inhospitable to protecting the planet. It's almost impossible to overhaul the pollution problem unless we also overhaul the economic system that sustains it. And I think that environmental organizations sometimes have a very difficult filter trying to sort that out, because you have to buy something more often than not to participate in a lot of these organizations, right? People with money have an easier time functioning within the strictures of the existing and big-scale environmental movement, because they have the cost of admission. They can buy the membership and the T-shirts and the special gear and all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, and the movement caters to large donors, you know, which again kind of reinforces the idea that this is a money system that we're dealing with, as much as the movement's reluctant to admit it. So that's what they have in common. That's what climate change has. It's an artifact of the economic system.
Fred, I'm glad you raised that issue. Let's wrestle with that for a moment. It's not an easy one to wrestle with. Let's do that. And then, Joe Weingrad, let me bring you into this, then we'll come back to the studio here with our guests here, because in many ways, I was thinking about that. You know, the United States consumes a huge amount of the world's resources. 25% from some of the studies I've read, and that people say all the time that number. But that if we were serious about tackling the issues of the environment, of thinking about what Walter Luther said in 1970, we should stop getting in our cars and start thinking about building a mass transit in this country, which we're not going to do for those same proper reasons that I think Fred was outlining. That we'd have to have a very different world if we really did that, if we really were serious about tackling the things that face us, because it is motivated by the profit. It is motivated by wanting to dig in the ground and get as much oil for as much money as humanly possible, and gas, not thinking about solar or nuclear or whatever people will believe should be the alternative. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I'm saying? So I think Fred has hit upon something. Jerry?
Well, the problem, as Fred detailed, is systemic. The first issue really is on global warming. The president has made that a priority. I mean, he's been more than outspoken. He's been criticized bitterly by the Republican leadership, and they are climate deniers. They not only don't want to move on climate change, they don't believe that climate change, at least they say, is caused by human activities. And those are key leaders in the Senate, the United States Senate, and in the United States Congress. So you have that barrier. In addition, the president is a pragmatist, and he also has a policy of all of the above. There has been more oil and gas extraction. We're at record levels, including on public lands under the control of the president as the chief executive. The fracking thing is under the president, and he is an all of the above: natural gas, coal, oil, solar, wind, energy conservation, and he's done a lot on fuel economy, on cars and all. So that's one issue, what he's trying to do with a Congress that is going to do nothing at all other than inhibit his actions by executive orders and by administrative actions and regulations to undo that. At the root of that is something that the bright young ladies there have mentioned, and that is that people on the streets, and particularly urban dwellers and folks that are in minority communities or lower income communities, whether they're minorities or not, they're not relating to polar bears, you know, being c- becoming extinct because of global warming, or walruses or other creatures affected. They're worried about food on the table and jobs and income and clean air and clean water. They want that too. So you have to couch it right. But really, at the Achilles heel of all of this is why 45 years after the first Earth Day and under President Nixon, the passage of such landmark legislation as the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Endangered Species Act, NEPA, the Basic Environmental Policy Act, all of these major pieces of legislation that occurred under Republican President, Democratic Congress, and this Congress is broken. We all know that. It doesn't work. And the key element here, though, is what is the counterforce? And that is the environmental community has not matured to be an effective, overwhelmingly crucial political entity in the United States of America and our democracy. With the decisions by the Supreme Court on no limits on these PACs, the environmentalists have even been shuttered to a relative obscure corner of political effectiveness. Look at the last election. Just look at the Congress and its makeup with climate deniers getting elected. And the same in the state of Maryland. Look at the election. Did the governor, Governor Hogan, was an environment really any major force in that election? Somebody that disavowed cleaning up farm pollution from chicken manure and his positions on the environment and pushing back on the clean air provisions that the O'Malley administration put at the last end, it would affect a lot of people's health in urban areas. So my bottom line point is that one of the readings that you sent us was that the comment was environmentalists were able to maintain the Earth Week and the Earth Day and all of that environmental momentum during the Ford and Carter administrations after Nixon, but came up, quote, against a brick wall once Reagan took office, forcing the movement back on the defensive, where it has largely remained ever since. Now, Reagan went out in January of 1989, so we're talking, you know, 26 years ago, and we're still on the defensive. And I would posture that unless the environmental community becomes more inclusive and has many, many more minorities involved and broadens the tent and gets wiser to become an effective environmental NRA, the National Rifle Association, we are going to continue to struggle to make any progress, whether it's cleaning up a local creek or stream or the Chesapeake Bay, or whether it's the tackle in an aggressive fashion global warming. The environmental community simply has not matured into an effective environmental political force in this country.
And until that, turning to Merrick Moyes here, there was an email that just came in from CW. CW wrote in this email, CW Younger, saying, I worked in the environmental movement field for 2 years. I've noticed a few things. One, the large environmental groups do not hire black people. Two, the large environmental groups support a lot of policies that actually harm poor urban areas. Mm. Three, the programming isn't usually geared towards black communities. I love talking about coal in West Virginia, but how do we connect that with Park Heights, which is one thing mm-hmm. Sasha was talking about. Merrick?
Amen, CW, and everybody else who's spoken. I have to really say that the same spirit that allowed the importation and exploitation of Africans and African bodies to build this hemisphere is the same spirit that allows for the exploitation of the earth. They are inextricably connected, and they just have morphed over the centuries. That being said, I think that Mr. Tutman was absolutely right. We can't consume our way out of climate change mm-hmm. and environmental exploitation. That is the same spirit that got us here. So, and part of the challenge is how do we broaden the tent, as the last person said, how do we broaden the tent? And I think that one of the things that we really need to talk about is the racism within the movement mm-hmm. and correcting that lens. So that means that people and organizations have to do a deep self-check. And I don't know if they are ready to do that. But what I think is very interesting is that without doing that, they cannot gather the political ganas. They cannot carry the political weight that is absolutely necessary mm-hmm. to carry the agenda of the movement forward. You cannot do it without everybody together. And I think that one of the things that we need to start thinking about, as CW said, was how do we create policy that is in accord with the spirit of the people? And we've yet to do that. We actually work together CW and I, and it was very interesting because we were pushing this bill called the Renewable Portfolio Standard, basically to increase the amount of clean energy used in Maryland, and that's great. But when we were going out in black communities, people were like, well, can y'all help me pay my light bill? Mm-hmm. Like, that was a real situation. Mm-hmm. And so then we have to come back around to the energy costs and how people are like, well, should I buy these groceries? Or maybe I can have my groceries to actually, like, pay this light bill, which is extraordinary. How do I pay this water bill? Wow, they're about to shut my water off. And we know that water is a human right. And so how do we balance all these things? Because on the ground in urban areas, that is what environmentalism looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to start talking about the issues that directly affect the people. And if we don't, we will lose. And it has grave political consequences, and it has grave consequences for the planet.
And kudos, you know. Exactly. That's exactly it, you know. And in order to be an effective political organization, you have to have community buy-in. Whatever your identified community is, those people have to know what you're about, and they have to be in a position to flock toward you. And what I found in the environmental movement, I've worked at majority white environmental organizations, huge policy organizations that are actively on the ground. They're meeting with the president, they're meeting with this congressman, they're meeting with that congressman, and I'm in your office and I feel uncomfortable because our cultures don't mix. And so there is a real need to address that from the policy-based level in those organizations. At the same time, is climate change the only thing that we need to be focused on? Because if we are putting all of this energy, effort, and resources into convincing people who don't believe in climate change that it's real, then how about all of the, again, negative externalities, as we're talking of the capitalistic system, you know, all of those negative externalities of not addressing just whatever, asthma, you know, or urban blight. You can't, going back to the water bill situation, our water bills here in Baltimore are higher because there aren't enough people to stretch the bill across. So, and that is caused by urban blight. You know, like we have houses like, you know, in Park Heights, you know, that have trees growing in them, you know, that are falling down. And so what type of financial responsibility does that create for the community, for the city, for the homeowner, for those to be allowed to go into decay? And so, you know, just like when we in the health field, when we talk about social determinants of health, what are the social determinants of environmentalism? You know, like there are clear factors that you have to address before you can even have the privilege to say, I'm an environmentalist, you know.
And we're about out of time, so I wanted to get some final thoughts about where do you both think we go from here, starting with Gerald Weingrad and close out with Fred Tupman, your final thoughts on where we do go from here on this 45th anniversary and what your thoughts about where we go next. Jerry?
Hello?
Hi, Jerry. Final closing comments from you and Fred.
You're right. Back in 2004, two young gentlemen in their 30s wrote a very thoughtful but piercing piece, Is Environmentalism Dead?, saying that the current status of environmentalism with the major national and environmental groups was not working and needed a total revamping. And I agree with that. I think we need more groups coming together and working together. Clearly, we need to expand our minority outreach and be much more inclusive and work with labor and other entities that will be the only way we succeed. So I am looking more at a systemic change. Science is great, and you can preach science. One of the first little idioms I learned in the General Assembly is don't confuse me with the facts. Environmentalists believe they're right. They believe everybody thinks like they do, and they don't. And so what we need to do is to reorganize our environmental organizations to dare them to look at how stasis has set in and how we're not working since President Reagan successfully to achieve the longer-term goals. And that means getting much more involved in the political realm, and it means also being an effective entity where politicians listen. The final point is in this last year gubernatorial election, nor in the presidential elections, is the environment really even an issue. And that is the saddest part of Earth Day 45 years later when I look at this, that when you do the polling at the state level, the environment doesn't even rattle. I talked to a key candidate for governor, trust me, and the candidate said, look, I've done the polls, and I see, you know, the environment is down there, one of the lowest ranked, you know, initiatives that people care about, and it's the same at the national level. Elections aren't being determined about people's environmental positions, and that has to change, or we can't change the dynamic in America of protecting our air, water, land, and our people qualities.
Fred Tupman.
So the editorial that Gerald just pointed out, there's a brilliant and scathing rebuttal to it written by a black African-American environmentalist named Ludovic Blaine, and it's called Ain't I an Environmentalist, in which he decries the lack of recognition for grassroots work being done in the trenches by people of color all over the globe. Mm. And one of the paradoxes of the green economy is we have created the expectation that you can get paid being green. And sadly, what I'm finding after 30-some years of activism is that the nature of work that tends to get you paid doing green stuff is really not the stuff that speaks truth to power, typically. Mm-hmm. And it's rarely the stuff that really needs to be done that will probably never really be funded, right? The difference between the environmental movement and the civil rights movement is that no one had the expectation in the civil rights movement that they were going to get a paycheck at the end of it. Right, but the environmental movement in this green economy needs to redirect its attention on that fundamental work that is counter-establishment. It actually fundamentally seeks almost revolutionary change in how we earn money, how we eat, how we manage our waste across the board. It's not just about picking up the trash, and it's not just about saying the right stuff so that we all get like a, you know, a green T-shirt or a, you know, a squeeze bottle at the end of it. And I'm being flip, but I mean,
yeah, right.
So that's the kind of inclusive movement that we need to work on. We're not going to muster much change at all if we don't have a fully inclusive and diverse movement. And grassroots movements are already diverse. You can hire diversity and you can fire it. The grassroots movements don't have that problem. They're already diverse.
Fred Tupman, Production Review Keeper, Gerald Weingrad, former state senator and environmental activist, Sasha Jones, Park Heights activist who runs the Park Heights Farm, and Reverend Merrick Moyes, thank you four for being here with us for this portion of the Mark Steiner Show on Soundbites. Good to have you all here. Thank you so much for your insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So long.